Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and I am here with my co-host Mike.
Hey everyone, today is Saturday, August 22nd, 2026, and we are covering the most fascinating stories that hit the front page yesterday. We are officially on episode 496, which means we are creeping right up on the big 500, Sarah.
I know, we need to plan something special for that one. But today, we have a really packed and honestly quite diverse lineup. We are talking about why software has no excuse to be slow anymore, a massive geopolitical shift with Canada and the US entering a full-blown trade war, the hilarious naming conventions of AI startups, a classic journal entry from Moxie Marlinspike, and a tool that lets you run an entire virtual office of AI clones right on your laptop.
It is a great mix. Let's kick things off with a post from Dan Liu that got a ton of traction. The title is a bold claim. There is no reason for software to be slow anymore.
Dan is always great at challenging conventional wisdom. His core argument here is that the cost of performance optimization has absolutely plummeted thanks to LLMs. He points out that performance work used to require a highly specialized team with rare skills, making it too expensive for most projects. But now you can just type a few sentences and have an agent do the heavy lifting.
Right. He gave this great example of a regex engine called Fred that he built. He just had an AI agent loop for a month on improving performance against a benchmark suite. And he even talked about building an Azul game AI that became the strongest in the world, mostly because he could just ask an LLM to rewrite the multi-threading algorithm multiple times until it worked perfectly. He said something that really stuck with me, which is that we used to look at a potential optimization and think, this will take a week to verify, so it is not worth it. Now, that cost has dropped by a factor of 1,000.
And Michael Malis was quoted in the piece, bringing up JIT compilers. He said, historically, writing a JIT compiler was just too difficult to be worthwhile for most software. But now, AI has lowered that barrier to entry. We can just be way more ambitious about the types of software we build. It's wild to think about. Dan even referred to the GPT 5.1 and 5.2 days as the past, showing just how fast this optimization capability is compounding.
The Hacker News comments were, as you would expect, very opinionated on this. A user named Ento pushed back, saying that the biggest cause of slowness isn't lack of JIT compilers, it's just waiting for web requests. They pointed out that so much software is online, and if you are outside the US connecting to US servers, you are eating 300 milliseconds of latency for every little interaction. They argue developers build with this default blocked assumption, relying on loading spinners instead of rethinking the architecture.
But then, a user named Nadir came in with a pretty strong rebuttal. They argue that blaming network latency is a superficial view, and actually just an excuse programmers use. Nadir said they have seen teams justify terrible code choices because they assume the 100 millisecond network round trip will dwarf whatever happens on the server anyway. So they just add another 150 milliseconds of wasteful processing on top of it.
Yeah, Nadir said creating fast software isn't even hard, it is just a matter of not doing ridiculously dumb things, like creating wasteful intermediate structures instead of just walking an array like a sane person. Another commenter chimed in saying that when optimizing code, you should first just de-slowify it, which is usually enough. It is the classic Hacker News debate between premature optimization and modern software bloat, but Dan Liu's point remains that when the AI can do the de-slowifying for you, we might actually see a renaissance of fast software.
Speaking of massive shifts, let us move to the second story, which is dominating the news cycle outside of tech too. The BBC reported that Canada will match US tariffs dollar for dollar as trade talks have completely broken down.
This is a huge deal. US President Donald Trump threatened a 50% levy on nearly $28 billion of Canadian imports, and Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney basically walked away from the negotiating table right before the Friday night deadline. Carney said the last-minute changes proposed by the US were unfair and uneconomic.
So now we are looking at these 50% tariffs going into effect using the Tariff Act of 1930, hitting Canadian wine, dairy, cement, clothing, you name it, and Canada slapping reciprocal tariffs right back. The Canadian Chamber of Commerce called it a body blow to North American competitiveness. Economists are projecting this could reduce Canada's GDP by up to 0.6%.
The comments on Hacker News really dug into the geopolitical strategy here. A user named Hung Lee Tu expressed frustration that the global community didn't respond in lockstep to these kinds of trade pressures earlier. They mentioned how various European and Asian leaders essentially caved or resigned, which shattered any prospect of collective action. They felt Canada is now being forced to face down the US alone.
But the Canadian commentators had a really nuanced take.
A user named SWAT535 said that, as a Canadian, they hope this forces the country to build stronger relations with Europe and reduce dependency on the US, because banking on a single player for trade has proven too risky.
Though another Canadian, YZF, pointed out the reality of the situation. They said the US is the world's biggest economy, and despite current challenges, they are still incredibly close to Canada in values and culture. They made the point that a Canadian new grad is still going to prefer working in Silicon Valley over anywhere else. They argued that decoupling from the US just isn't realistic or in Canada's best interest long term, especially compared to the alternatives. It is a tense situation, and it is definitely going to impact cross-border tech operations and hardware supply chains in a big way.
Definitely one to watch. Okay, let us lighten the mood a bit. Our third story is a really fun observation by a blogger named Jamoka, titled 11 Labs, 12 Labs, 13 Labs.
I loved this one. Jamoka noticed the speech synthesis company 11 Labs, and then heard about a video AI company called 12 Labs. So jokingly, they Googled 13 Labs and found an AI 3D scenery project. Then 14 Labs, another AI startup. They actually mapped out the numbers 0 through 99 and found that almost every single number followed by the word labs is an AI company or a squatted domain.
It is such a funny naming scheme. Jamoka was asking, are people independently arriving at this? Why are the 70s so much more dense than the higher numbers? But the Hacker News comments actually solve the mystery of where this all started, and the history is fascinating.
Yeah, User Possibilistic dropped some serious lore. They explained that all of these companies actually copied the naming convention from a project called 15.ai.
Right, and user Rozob added context that 15.ai was created by a Team Fortress 2 player who just wanted to crack deep voice synthesis to make My Little Pony characters say funny things. He offered it for free on his site. The name 15 wasn't some clever branding exercise, it was literally just his username.
Possibilistic, who actually built a competing product called FakeU, said that 15.ai could have been a massive venture-scale outcome if the creator had fundraised and turned it into a SaaS product, but he didn't. So other founders saw the massive attention 15.ai was getting and just started squatting on every other number plus labs domain. 11 Labs obviously became the massive success story out of that trend, pivoting to a highly successful enterprise model.
The thread also went into how the music labels got involved. Possibilistic mentioned talking to the founder of an AI music startup who was about to raise $10 million from A16Z, but by the end of the week, the music labels forced them to shut down and the funding fell apart. It really paved the way for companies like Suno and Udio to come in later with more consumer-friendly models. It is just a great example of how a random internet subculture project can accidentally spawn a multi-billion dollar tech naming convention.
From internet subculture to real-world grit, our next story is a total blast from the past. It is a tweet linking to a journal entry from 2006 by Moxie Marlinspike, the founder of Signal. The post is just titled Scrap.
This was such a joy to read. Moxie tells the story of moving from the West Coast to Pittsburgh in the dead of winter. He had this romanticized idea of snow angels and icicles, but instead he found himself in a freezing wrecked house with no utilities, trying to install gas lines in the basement while his thread sealant literally froze in the tube.
The core of the story is about the local Pittsburgh scrappers. Moxie and his roommates pulled a heavy cast iron bathtub out of the house and left it in the backyard, and it vanished in less than 24 hours. He realized that while San Francisco has scroungers looking for vintage furniture, Pittsburgh has scrappers hunting for raw metal.
So later, they put out a broken gas furnace. A beat-up pickup truck rolls up with these two older guys, Ron and Wade. Moxie describes them like characters out of a Walter Matthau movie, where they are both hard of hearing, so they just scream at each other from 2 inches away. Wade is this huge 250-pound guy, and Ron is the scrappy one.
They decide to haul this incredibly heavy furnace up 17 narrow basement steps. It is a complete disaster. They are moaning and yelling, and at one point, Wade screams that he can't lift it because he only has 3 toes due to, quote, the sugars. They get stuck in the stairwell, Wade gets claustrophobic and completely panics, and ends up literally scrambling over the top of the furnace with Moxie pushing him from behind to squeeze through a 2-foot gap. Then Ron just takes an axe and smashes a pipe out of the wall to free the furnace.
And at the very end, Moxie asks them how much they even get for the steel, and they yell back, 4 cents a pound. It is just brilliant storytelling.
The comments were so pure. a lot of people saying how much they miss this era of the internet where people just wrote long-form personal blog posts. But also, a lot of Pittsburgh locals chiming in to say the city is still exactly like this. User IntraSite said they recently put scrap aluminum on the curb and a guy in a Subaru Forester grabbed it before they even walked back to the house.
IntraSite also mentioned they bought a 150-year-old brick fixer-upper house on a river outside Pittsburgh last year for just $40,000. That sparked a whole side conversation about housing affordability, with tech workers talking about how you can still buy a massive house on a large plot of land near Pittsburgh for a fraction of what a tiny condo costs in the Bay Area. It sounds like a pretty great place if you don't mind the winters and the scrappers.
All right, our final story today brings us back to the cutting edge of AI, but with a very funny twist. It is a project called Munder Difflin, which is an agent harness to run an office of your clones.
The branding on this is incredible. It is obviously a play on Dunder Mifflin from The Office. Munder Difflin is a free, open-source tool that runs locally on your computer. It wraps whatever CLI agent you already use, like Claude Code, Codex, or Grok, and turns them into 24/7 clones of you and your teammates.
So you can have a Michael clone, a Pam clone, and a Dwight clone all running in isolated work trees. And the crazy part is they can talk to each other. If Jim's clone is blocked at 3 a.m. because it needs design tokens, it can send an end-to-end encrypted message to Pam's clone, which fetches the files and unblocks Jim's clone, all while the actual humans are asleep.
The creator, Chaitanya, was actually hanging out in the Hacker News comments. He explained that the simulation is deterministic and doesn't actually consume tokens just to run the office simulation. He said it actually reduces token consumption because it uses a benchmarked memory layer called MemPalace as a hive mind for context. People are using it to review PRs, manage Discord servers, and automate cold emails.
But it definitely sparked a philosophical debate in the comments. User Ornerness said this perfectly represents the dysfunction of agent swarms they have seen, where different AI personalities pursue their own goals, and it leads to a funny collapse of the desired outcome. They compared it to the old trend of hiring offshore virtual assistants, where you just end up playing a frustrating game of telephone trying to navigate communication barriers. They said they really don't want to work with anyone who surrounds themselves with a multi-agent coordination system as an external shell.
I totally get that fear. The idea of two AIs just endlessly emailing each other while the humans lose all context is a bit dystopian. Another user, Shiny Leftpad, sarcastically commented that nothing could go wrong if we reduce direct human interaction even further and pay megacorporations to man in the middle all of it.
But on the flip side, someone pointed out that if you treat it as a productivity tool rather than a replacement for human connection, it is incredibly powerful. If you are a solo developer or a small team, having a local, private swarm of agents that actually share context and can hand off tasks overnight is basically a superpower. And the fact that it runs locally on your machine, keeping your code and keys private, is a massive selling point for the Hacker News crowd.
It really is. I think we are going to see a lot more of these personalized local agent swarms. And if they come with a fun 90s office aesthetic, even better.
Absolutely. Well, that is going to do it for us today. Five really distinct stories that capture exactly what makes Hacker News so great. From the bleeding edge of AI optimization and agent swarms, to global trade wars, to a guy with three toes stealing a furnace in 2006.
Thank you all so much for listening to episode 496. We will be back tomorrow with another batch of the top stories. Until then, keep your code fast and watch out for the scrappers.
See you tomorrow, everyone.